Welcome back to the Georgia 2024 show. I'm on the road in Savannah, Georgia, actually. I'm here with my co-host, Bill Quinn. Thanks for coming on, Bill.
Good evening. It's good to be with you.
Good evening. Everybody's working hard. Everybody's getting a little tired. Everybody needs to find the coffee and get back in the fight. I think a lot of people are discouraged as to what's happening around, but we need to rally the troops and to keep the fight going as to the fight for secure elections. I mean, in Georgia and across the country, we've made a lot of progress. The empire struck back, and now we need to get on to destroying the Death Star, metaphorically, of course. So with that, we're brought to you by the Georgia Record, georgiarecord.com. Please sign up for our NOAA subscriptions. That's really helpful. We've had a lot of support from around the state of Georgia. We're getting a lot of very good feedback from Georgians on the show and saying they watch us twice a week religiously, and they really love the content. And thank you for bringing all of this out that we've been bringing out over the last few weeks. It's been really impactful. And thank you for the comments, audience. We really appreciate it. We appreciate our Frank Speech audience, our Conservative Daily audience, and others, syndicate partners that we use around the country. This show is getting millions of views every month, and we really, really appreciate it. So sign up for our social media. We need to help get the message out. Word of mouth and X and all the other media that we're on is extremely important. X is growing nicely. Thank you. And our Rumble channel, CDM1. Bill, what's going on with our lineup tonight?
Okay, first we're going to hear from Garland Favorito. He's got some updates from the state election board meeting that's been going on yesterday and today, and some things that we want to hear straight from the Capitol. So Garland was able to make it back. Will join us. We're going to hear from Paul Kettering, a candidate for a House seat, and his background and his aspirations. And then we'll hear from one of your interviews with the MIT student. Please repeat his name, if you would.
Yeah, Spencer Senthusen. We've been working with him. He's a sharp young man in Massachusetts at MIT, and I'm hoping to continue to get his word out as a conservative student on campus, fighting against the matrix, the cabal on campus, and try to get this to some of the Georgia universities, and hopefully some young people will see this and get encouraged and mimic what he's doing, because he's become quite effective there at MIT. Before we move on to our guests, it's springtime and summer's coming, travel season's coming. Don't forget your emergency medical kits. This is extremely important. You don't know when disease X is coming. There's a lot of chatter about a lot of different things, but the wellness company, twc.health/CDM, promo code CDM for a 10% discount. You can get all of their medical kits as well as their spike support formulas and other stuff. I'm going to run a quick ad from them. Whoops.
All we did at the wellness company, the chief medical board sat down and said, look, is there anything else that we could wisely and cautiously add to these kits that we're making available to people that would give, number one, some sense of security or confidence that people are prepared, and also be something that had broad applicability to other viruses. We added Tamiflu. Tamiflu is known to be modestly effective against influenza, and it is approved for the use in both post-exposure prophylaxis of avian flu, H5N1, or treatment of H5N1. It certainly isn't a panacea. It means it isn't going to necessarily be the cure-all, but it's one more thing, one more arrow to add to our quiver, if you will, of all of the things that people can and should, I believe, have on hand after what we witnessed during COVID. We certainly saw for the first time in my 30-plus years as a physician a time when people were not able to access safe, inexpensive, highly effective medications. And we don't want people to find themselves in that position again, should we have another outbreak of some sort.
So, Bill, we had Chris Cuomo come out today and said he was taking ivermectin during his COVID infection while the whole world was saying it was a joke, and that the drug actually works. And we also had AstraZeneca remove its vaccines from the market because of serious side effects. The New York Times is saying, oh, yes, well, people are saying they have vaccine injuries. So they're starting to do kind of a limited hangout to bring out the truth about the vaccines. So check out the spike support at the Wellness Company. If you have somebody who's vaccine injured who has symptoms, it's twc.health/CDM, promo code CDM. Is our first guest ready, Bill?
He is. Here we go. Garland Favorito, thank you for joining us, sir.
Good to be back with you, Bill. Todd?
You must have skirted through the traffic to make it back from the Capitol. Well done.
We did. The meeting went over to about 5 o'clock or so. We chatted with the chairman for a while to express our displeasure with what happened yesterday and the fact that it was not corrected today when he had the opportunity to do so. That was when we skirted through. Fortunately, we came in a way which didn't have that much traffic.
Okay. So for folks that aren't up to speed on what was bypassed yesterday, I think they need to know this is this is a very important, very vital after now 2 years of fighting on a given case. And it's just one example. Maybe you could bring us up to speed on what did not happen and unfortunately did not happen again today.
Yeah. So, Bill, and we put the press release out on voterj.org press release tab. Yesterday, the state election board heard the most important case in the entire history of the board, which has been operating for decades. And that was a case filed by Joe Rossi, who's been on your show, and Kevin Monkla. And it was SEB 2023-025. And what this complaint alleged is that there were up to 58,000 ballots that had no source justification. Now, what I'm talking about here is electronic ballots. So electronic votes were counted for 58,000 votes, and they had no ballot images. They had there were all sorts of things. In fact, let me just tell you exactly what the complaint said. The complaint said that there were 20,713 ballots with certified votes that have no source tabulator from which they should have originated. There were 17,852 ballots that for certified votes that had no ballot images. And you're required to have a ballot image to create a cast vote record to tabulate the results.
And it's done automatically by the system in normal circumstance, yes?
That's right. And without any human intervention whatsoever. Thank you for mentioning that, because the attorney for the Secretary of State's office, Charlene McGowan, attempted to imply yesterday that that was not correct, but you're right. 17,234 unsourced votes found after certification. And these votes that popped in at the last minute were used to balance the results, the audit results. And then finally, there were 3,125 double scanned, double counted ballots. The state admitted to the double scan of the ballots. They pretended, after looking at this case for a year and a half, they pretended they didn't know whether or not they were included in the results or not. That's another fabrication. That was a claim made by Charlene McGowan. 17,852 ballots, they admitted that there were votes with no ballot images. So they admitted at least part of the claims, and the state election board refused to refer this case to the attorney general's office for investigation and prosecution of those parties who were guilty of what appears to be clear tampering with the electronic results. So just to give you an idea how bad that is, the state election board historically votes to, and even today voted to send what we call onesie twosies over to the attorney general's office for prosecution. Let's say somebody voted in their old location instead of their new one. And a lot of times the attorney general's just doesn't never acts on the cases because they're too so trivial. But the point I'm trying to make is state election board typically refers the most trivial violations over to the Attorney General's office. Today, thanks to Dr. Jan Johnson, she identified over 140 violations committed by Fulton County in certifying the 2020 election results, which should have never been certified, according to her comments. And she has there's never been anything like this in state election board history. 143 violations identified, and the case was not referred to the Attorney General. So,
and those violations contribute to, as you mentioned, thousands upon thousands of votes. That in fact, if you rolled, you know, we're not in a position to roll it back today, but if you rolled those back, we would have had a different outcome as I understood it. Is that a fair assumption?
Most likely, Bill. In total, there were up to 58,924 ballots cast that cannot be sourced.
Yep.
So,
just one point that I want to bring out too. Jan Johnson actually made a motion to have this referred and a couple other things. Yeah. And the rest of the board sat there silent. Nobody would second that motion.
That's right. And so Jan, you know, there was, first of all, Rick Jeppers, the new appointee for the board by Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones, was not there. He was expected to be on the call remotely. We knew that he was running a conference down in St. Simons. But why that conference and this meeting could not have been resolved months ago, because I'm sure they were planned months in advance, I have no idea. But the board had moved the case up, and the chairman expected for Rick Jeffers to be on the call, and he was not. And as you said, Bill, the other two board members, Sarah Tyndall Geisel from the Democratic Party appointee, actually made a motion to dismiss the case entirely with 140 violations. I don't know how much more corrupt you can get than that. But Ed Lindsay, the Republican supposedly on the board, appointed by former chair David Ralston, actually refused to second her motion. And then he even refused the chairman's motion. When the chairman made a motion to refer this case to the Attorney General, Ed Lindsay refused to do that. And this was just after 15 people in public comments asked for his resignation in the morning session. So you can see why 15 people were right and that Ed Lindsay should have recused himself because of conflicts of interest. What he tried to claim that he was making a reprimand because a reprimand would be faster than going through the Attorney General's office. We didn't buy that. That's just pure corrupt talk. He was covering up the criminal activity that occurred in the 2020 election. I feel pretty confident in saying that. Yeah. It was pretty obvious to everybody who was there, and they're right that he should have been recused.
Joe Rossi, who brought these complaints, along with Kevin Monklin, I think he had also some other help, himself has called this a cover-up. And it sounds as if we all agree that that's what this appears to be. Is that fair?
It's the greatest election cover-up in the history of the state of Georgia. I've never had seen a Secretary of State's office in cahoots with Fulton County to cover up their violations. The Republican Secretary of State's office in cahoots with the Democrat majority Fulton County. What was interesting about this, Bill, is that the investigator could not answer very basic questions about this incredibly important case. And the Charlie McGowan, the attorney for the Secretary of State's office, jumped into what should have been a technical question, saying that no one from the technical side was available for the most important case in state election board history. Basically analyzing this case for 2 years, they couldn't get anybody there to answer questions. So suddenly she becomes legally defending the corruption in the case instead of actually trying to get to the bottom of what happened.
Isn't it? And she was noted in some of Joe Rossi's previous testimony and statements on this show and others about efforts that appeared to be attempted to block this case, to dismiss the case, to cover it up, to shuffle it under the rug, everything but investigate it properly.
Yeah, she kept telling the board that, oh, well, we have the paper ballots. That's for, this is all about the electronic, not, but we've got the paper ballots. Well, she personally has been fighting us for 3 years to prevent us from looking at the ballots. She filed an amicus brief against us in that case. And thanks to you, gentlemen, you did an article about this, about all the lies that were in her amicus brief when she filed back 2 years ago in an attempt to continue to conceal the ballots from 5 million Georgia voters.
So as we look forward, you know, we didn't get everything we wanted in 189. It was signed, but notably, one of the key things that was due to be stated by the legislature was an answer to a question that the SEB posed a couple of months ago. Can we investigate Brad Raffensperger or his office? And they declined to directly answer whether they could investigate Brad Raffensperger, who seems to be somehow, you know, tied to many of these dynamics. So,
yeah.
Tell us about 189 and what we got and what we didn't get, please.
Well, what I think Joe would say is that the issue was not that we could investigate Raffensperger. The issue is that we should be able, that the board should be able to investigate what his office did. And what they tried to do was turn it into a constitutional issue when that was never the real intent. His office's functions should be open to the investigative should be on the independent investigator of the state election board. But that did not happen, as you said, Bill. And that was another travesty that didn't get done. But to your point about 189, we did get some amazing things passed. We got, and I'm trying to remember them all, ballots will now be public record as of July 1. We won't have to worry about that anymore. There are improved chain of custody provisions coming. All absentee ballots prior to election day have to be tabulated on election night, anything received prior to election day. The QR codes are going to be banned, we will are pretty excited about that. However, it's not really acceptable to wait 2 years for that. We are looking for a decision from the Curlin v. Raffensperger case, hopefully in the next month, to do that. We got some other things passed and other bills. And the poll workers now have close-up observation access to hear and see everything in all aspects of election processes. And so those are some of the additional things. Election workers now have to be U.S. citizens. And so what an amazing package, I think, is a landmark package for other states to follow.
Todd?
Garland, where should people be putting their resources right now? Time, energy, what is the most important thing that needs to be pressured and worked on?
Well, as of today, since the legislative session is now over, there's nothing more we can do there. Hats off to the legislators. They did a lot. I think that we need to pressure the state election board. This is going to be we're going to have to campaign to get that over to the attorney general's office. Attorney general does not want it because he is going to run for governor. He doesn't want this case. But that I think that would be one of the things for Georgians to work on right now.
To pressure them in what way?
Well, we put out a press release. We're going to have to email them and put a lot of heat on the chairman to do the right thing. Because what I witnessed yesterday was probably the single most corrupt act in the history of the state election board.
So what, expound on that. What would be the right thing that he could do?
Well, Jan did a series of motions. One was her motion to refer the case to the Attorney General's office. She wanted to motion to make the ballots public record. They did go along with her motion to have monitors, that they mutually agreed upon monitors for the 2024 Fulton County election. All monitors on all aspects. That was a good thing. But she had one or two other things that all of which should have passed, and they didn't. So we're going to have to pressure them to do that, and we'll come out with some type of a campaign to do that probably between now and the weekend.
Okay, that's all I got, Bill.
So let's see, as we look forward to the next actions from the SEB. When is their next meeting? I expected they would be having one almost every month this year, but it isn't being done that way, is it?
It's a quarterly meeting, Bill, and the next meeting will be a special meeting in July.
Interesting. So if you don't want to get things done, just string your meetings out. That might explain things.
Yeah. it's really sad to report this, but today I think I mentioned they had a chance to reverse themselves. Jan made another motion to reconsider the case, and as well as Rick Jeffers, who was on the call, he made a motion to reconsider. They varied a little bit. The chairman ruled that both motions were out of order. They were not on the agenda. I don't know of a meeting in American history where a motion had to be on agenda ahead of time. That's not the way board meetings work. And I don't think that's in accordance with Robert's Rule of Order.
Yeah, the motion to reconsider 206 wasn't on the agenda, but that was reconsidered and ultimately passed by the legislature. So very interesting. So we will have you back soon, Garland. I would like to I'd like to hear, as you get going and others get going on pressing this issue.
Yeah.
I feel like, and Todd mentioned it earlier, we are getting into the thick of things here, and I think we need to be putting pressure on those that could make a new decision. So,
yeah. And Bill, one last thing to add to what Todd said. The other thing that folks can do is they can pressure for Ed Lindsay's resignation. 15 people did that yesterday. And so that's another thing to write the board about.
Yep. All right. Thank you for.
This is going to have to come from the people. I mean, they're not going to do it. So we have to not accept what's happened. This is organized crime at a very high level.
Yes. And
the people cannot accept this. So we people have to show up and, just not accept it.
Exactly. And that's what they did. They had a 30 limit cutoff, but we had 47 people come yesterday. And the chairman did. Since they signed up, the chairman did allow all 47, I think, to speak for 2 minutes. So that's exactly what's going on. But now we have some new material to work with.
Yep.
Okay.
Garland, thank you for being with us.
Yes, My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it.
See you soon.
Garland, okay. It's good to have on with a good – he's good on the procedural stuff.
That's right, and in a good sense of the relationships that are in play all across this. So, yeah. Troubling though they may be.
Yeah, well, we know what we're up against now, Georgia. So act accordingly.
Yep.
Beef is one of the most nutritious, dense nutritional products you can give your family. And I came across a quote this morning. From Genesis 9:4, every moving thing that lives shall be food for you, even as the green herbs have I given you all things. So beef is there for us to eat. And if you eat natural non-mRNA beef, you will give your family one of the most nutritious things out there. And we luckily have a cattleman that can provide that. It's extremely tasty. I just ordered a box for my family yesterday. Another one, it's familyfarmbeefbox.com. Bill, if you could please run an ad.
Whoops. We roll these back up.
And I interviewed Glade again yesterday, Glade Miller-Smith, who runs familyfarmandbeefbox.com, and will be running that on CDM shortly. And we'll try to get that on the Georgia show. And one of his points was that for the price of the beef he sells, you can feed your family four times versus taking a decent sized family out to dinner. So with very nutritious food, but he doesn't give it away. It's not cheap, but it's healthy, good, and very, very nutritious. So with that, Bill, let's bring in our next guest.
Okay. So just to set this up, we were in attendance at the GRA candidate forum, and they called it a media gala, if you will, and got a chance to interview a number of the candidates, one of which was Paul Kettering, and that's who we're going to hear from now.
All right, we are back. We're here at the GRA Media Gala up in Canton, Georgia. We're joined by Paul Kettering. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
So you are running for House District 22, yes?
Yes, sir.
So tell me if you can, how did you decide to enter the race? I mean, these are not trivial decisions. So,
No, it was very, very tough decision, actually. Kind of a prayerful decision. It took me about 2 weeks of two solid weeks of prayer, almost hoping that God would say, nope, you're off the hook, hoping that he would just want my compliance and willingness to do it, then say, good, that's all I want, but that's not the case. So I just felt compelled, I felt led to do it. I had a family member killed in his own front yard last October by an illegal immigrant, so that had something to do with it. There's just a lot of issues going on, right now, and I feel like we're running out of road, and I feel like we need to replace the 50 percenters that are supposedly representing us right now. So yeah. I feel like that's a big need, so that's what compelled me to run.
That concept has come up in just about every discussion this evening, the notion that, on paper, we would seem to have 60% or more control by conservatives of both the House and the Senate in Georgia, yet we don't seem to make decisions that way.
No.
Do you have a theory about why that is when people have these R's next to their name?
They're not really Republicans. First and foremost, they only represent us about 50% of the time at best. 99.9% of our assembly members only represent us accurately about 50% of the time. Democrats don't have that problem. It's only the ones with R next to their name that seems to have that problem. So it seems to be a collaboration of uniparty reps that represent us right now. So they represent themselves, special interests, lobbyists, and then us the people last. So that's the problem.
It sure sounds like it. So let's assume that you are elected. Talk about some of the priorities that you would think to focus on as you begin serving.
Priorities: economy, election integrity, and our border, and not necessarily in that order, because I think the border, in my opinion, is the most important issue right now, is the border. Some people say it's the economy, it's inflation, but open borders, poverty as a nation doesn't exist anymore with the borders open. It affects the economy, it affects election integrity, it affects everything on the list, our safety, all of us. I think that's the most important, but that's the three things that I want to really hit home.
So when you think about the border, there's of course the U.S., southern U.S. border, but then we've had cases where Colton Moore and others have spotted trafficking going on right here in Georgia. Right. Does it strike you as odd that after that report comes out with video, with facts, that we seem to hear just deadly silence? Nobody's standing up going, oh my gosh, we have to look into this. And yet everybody's treating it as if it didn't happen.
Right. Well, accountability is key, and that's something I want to bring. Accountability, even if a legislator is limited on what they can actually do, they can bring accountability. You're standing down there on the floor and you're drawing attention to the issues. You are bringing accountability to people. Like Brian Kemp ran on this issue. I mean, he ran on
the big truck,
his truck,
the famous big truck,
the shotgun in the truck. Yeah. And yet, he was outraged when Lincoln Riley was murdered by an illegal immigrant. You don't really get to be outraged when you don't hold up your, campaign promises. But there needs to be accountability across the board, top to bottom. There needs to be accountability.
Yeah. So one of the other things that we keep hearing over and over again is people run for office. They're well known by their family, their friends, their longtime friends of them. And I've heard more than one time, the person that I know in that office today is not the person I used to know. Do you have a sense about why that might be? What is it that makes people, not everybody, but some, change in some way?
Well, first of all, you have to know what anchors you, what's your moral anchor, which for me, it's God, it's the word of God, it's my faith. So I'm anchored by that. Some people don't have that anchor. If you go into that arena and lifestyle without some sort of a moral anchor, you're open to anything. You're susceptible to anything. And I think that's why people change so much. They just you walk into that dome and you're bombarded by pressures and outside influences and things. So you have to know what you're anchored to, and you have to know what leads you and guides you. And that's God, the Holy Spirit guides me, and his word is what I'm anchored to. That's the truth of his word.
It's very interesting. There's cases where you can see people's attitude play out. They, at the beginning of this past legislative session, a number of folks went down to the Capitol to ask for focus on key issues that they believe needed to be focused on, election integrity among a number.
Right.
And in some cases, they were welcomed into the office. You know, legislators said, come on in. I'm happy to have you here. I'd love to hear what your views are. And in other cases, they were actually pretty much rebuffed. Hey, no video, no this, no that. And it struck many as sort of odd. You know, why wouldn't you want to be videoed? Why wouldn't you want to have your views known?
Right.
Is there something in there you don't want people to know?
Right.
As you look forward to, you know, again, potentially getting an office, what kinds of things do you think you might be able to do to help people maintain and see that transparency? And to your point about accountability, how would you support that?
I just want to maintain. I want to be true to my convictions. I want to be true to the Republican base and the values associated with that. You know, and then I think that's part of the problem. They promise and then they don't deliver on the promise. So I mean, at the very least, I want to be a red stamp. You know, I've heard Colton talk about the green stamps. They have green stamps. That's all they do is green stamp everything.
Yep.
I would like to be a red stamp at the very least. And then just bring on the good stuff, which is few and far between.
You bring up Colton. Do you expect to be associated perhaps with the Georgia Freedom Caucus? Or
I would join the Freedom Caucus. I wouldn't. I've spoken to him. Yeah, I mean, I would love to be, I look up to the guy a lot. I know he did.
Oh, great. So if people are going to see this around Georgia tonight through our broadcast and then through the coming days, if they want to learn more about what your goals and priorities are, is there a place they can go to see more about you?
KetteringForGeorgiaHouse.com.
Yeah,
KetteringForGeorgiaHouse.com.
Okay, great. And now we're here at this event tonight. Are there other events that you expect to participate in the coming couple of weeks or so?
We have the Farm Bureau Forum tomorrow night in Canton. And I can't think of what else is coming up. I look at the calendar, there's so much coming up. But yeah.
I know, there's a lot moving right now. There's a lot of people want to know more.
Yes,
so that's great. Well, thank you for joining us. And we'll look to hear more as the campaign progresses. And hopefully you can give us updates. Thanks for being with us.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Great interview, Bill. I liked what he had to say. I think you're on mute.
Sorry about that. It's one of my extra mute buttons. My extra production crew missed that one. the very good gentleman, very nice gentleman. And, you know, I think he's thought through, from what I gathered, he's thought through the fact that, you know, the fight doesn't end when you get elected. You got to be fighting all the time when you're in that kind of a role because there's so many varying motivating influences and things swirling around you. So good guy. We'll see how the campaign goes.
So markets are extremely volatile. Interest rates are volatile. Gold is volatile, but rising. Cryptos all over the map, but in an upward trend. Stocks are, I think, very overvalued. So where do you put your money? I would go to our resident financial advisor, David Cross of U.S. Asset Management, if we could run his ad, please.
This is a special report. Knowing how to invest your money is harder than ever before. Dealing with stock market volatility, record debt, and terrorist attacks requires new thinking. At U.S. Asset Management, we can help you see the world more clearly so that you can move beyond the chaos and invest with confidence. Call us, visit us online, or drop by our office. U.S. Asset Management, helping you make better decisions with your money.
So if you have a death in the family, a transfer of wealth, a new job, getting married, selling your house, buying a house, talk to David because there's a lot of things you need to think about now with regulatory, tax, all kinds of issues that he can help you with, U.S. Asset Management. Are we ready for Spencer, Bill?
Yes, please.
So we've developed a relationship with Spencer Sintius and is a student at MIT in Massachusetts. Very prestigious university, and he's one of the courageous few voices there that I have found, and he's done a lot for us in different interviews, and he runs a group called Students for Open Inquiry at MIT, and I'm hoping he will be a role model for students in Emory and University of Georgia and Georgia University. So I'm going to run that interview now. So we're back with Spencer Sintius from MIT, and he is fighting for free speech on campus. Welcome back, Spencer.
Thank you, Ms. Wood.
So you emailed me. There's a lot of developments going on there and since we last talked. So fill us in on what's happening.
Absolutely. So a week ago, the MIT Students for Open Inquiry, my club, was co-hosting an event called a debate on whether sex is binary, and features the former president of the ACLU as the moderator. It has two professors of philosophy on the affirmative side and an LGBT activist and a medical journalist on the negative side. So it's a very fair, very balanced debate. And, you know, impartial is supposed to be a scholarly discussion, very academic, and you know, impartial is not hateful at all. And publicized the event. And it's a topic that, you know, is, in my opinion, really accommodating to people on the left, because you know, sex, you know, it's something that should be, normally we take it for granted. You know, we don't always have debates on gender, whether gender is binary and sex is a different topic. We're, you know, we're actually talking about that, which is a really interesting thing. And you know, I said this event is going on in an email to the entire campus, and, you know, I got caught up in an entire fireball of controversy. You know, I got public attack, not physically, but yeah, I got my character attacked, my intelligence attacked, and my sanity to an extent attacked. And yeah, you know, like that's when they have nothing of substance to throw at you. They'll attack your character. They'll attack. They'll throw out some of those nasty smears. And you know, it's actually very interesting that even this kind of debate, like it's not even an opinionated thing. It's a fair and, you know, thing, and both sides are at the table, and both sides are you know, scholars. And we got the ACLU president to debate, to moderate, and the process is supposed to promote free speech and discussion on the topic. And like that's the spirit of this thing. We need to have honest and open discussions on topic. I think that's why free speech matters. And when I do this and people attack me, like that shows that there are a lot of people out there who, you know, are not open to the idea of free speech. And, you know, it's actually funny that one person actually emailed me and said, oh, this topic is harmful. And I said, why is it harmful? We're just having a scholarly discussion. And you know, they said, you know, it's really harmful to people who are intersex, which I'll admit there are some of them that, you know, it's a process of genetics, and like in my opinion, that doesn't make sex not binary, because like rules have exceptions, and those are like you know, a very small part of the population. It's legitimate, but we're not denying that they don't exist. We're not denying that they're not human. We're not denying that, you know, they should be treated equally, or we're not saying they should be treated differently than other people. We're not saying anything harmful. We're just talking about it was having this whole debate, and also the debate also entails whether, you know, sexual identity or gender identity should be the determinant of social policy, which, you know, it's a really scintillating discussion, and I don't understand how harmful it was. It's like, anything that goes against their idea of you know, of gender relations and all this stuff, and they'll say it's harmful. Last semester, we had her saying from New Jersey, who's a Republican, come over and give a talk, and you know, some of the trans group on campus said, well, he's a really harmful person. We shouldn't have him on campus because he's hateful. He's putting out all this bile against the LGBT community. But what he said, he didn't say anything. He didn't call for you know, violence. He didn't call for differential treatment. He didn't call for anything. He said something about you know, the trans issue. Like, we should be trans and kids, and that's not harmful at all. So, like, it's really interesting how the suppression of idea works. Like, you know, they'll call things that aren't like harmful, and they'll try to shut down. But like, that's pretty disheartening to see.
Well, once you realize that it's never about the thing that they're talking about, it's always just about the revolution and gaining power. So once you get that, then everything else makes sense, in my opinion. And we're seeing this in college campuses across the country. I mean, you look at Yale today, and you've had a similar incident at MIT, right? As far as the whole Israeli Jewish question.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah. And now, you know, MIT has had a really interesting development on the issue of, you know, Israel and Palestine. Like, a few weeks ago, or rather several weeks ago, we passed the undergraduate student body passed a resolution affirming the right of a group on MIT campus that engage in harassment, engage in calling for the Intifada, engage in calling for the genocide of Jews. And, you know, that group apparently got suspended by the MIT president because they violated some campus rules. Mm-hmm. And the undergraduate student body said, well, we're going to pass this resolution that affirmed you know, solidarity, in their words, with this organization. It would also call for ceasefire, but also call for the severing of research ties between MIT and the Israeli military, which, yeah, I actually sent an email about it earlier. And the cutting of ties between MIT and the Israeli military is really dangerous, because the research that MIT conducts, like, primarily revolves around defensive technology, not offensive technology. So you imagine the Iron Dome and some of the software system that they use to track missiles and threats and detection and surveillance technology, and all this stuff is really important for the safety of the Israeli people, for the safety of the Jewish state. And when we cut those ties, like, that's going to have a lot of negative implications on the national security of Israel, but also on, and, you know, a lot of these people talk about human rights, about you know, people in Gaza and people in Palestine. But what about the rights and the human rights and lives of people in Israel? And by the way, the people in Gaza, I think, there's a lot to be said about Hamas, and so far nobody's talking about Hamas. They always blame Israel. They always claim this false moral equivalence between Israel, you know, which is acting in its defense, which is exercising its right to self-defense, and Hamas is like a terrorist organization that doesn't have any regard for human lives. And you know, they all use this false moral equivalence to influence narratives and influenced discussion on this topic. And when I sent out this email, somebody attacked me for saying, you know, I'm racist, or which is really interesting. You know, how is it racist to, you know, say Jewish lives matter too? How is it racist to say, you know, yeah. And I said, this is going to have a lot of implications in national security, but also implications on economic policy. So in my email, it listed basically three reasons for why this resolution shouldn't be passed. You know, first of all, the student organization that the resolution was going to declare solidarity with has engaged in harassment, engaged in dangerous and inappropriate behavior. Mm-hmm. And second of all, you know, the cutting of research ties is going to have a lot of implications in the peace and stability of the Middle East. You know, we've seen that already with Iran. Like, Iran's been emboldened by the weak leadership of the West. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they shot missiles at Israel. They started directly attacking Israel. So, like, we're going to see a lot more of that in the future. Yeah. And more beyond that, like, that's going to have a lot of economic implications also, in terms of supply chain and, you know, I think we've seen that with the Houthis, with the Ukraine war, and I think that's really a matter that serves to be examined. And somebody said, well, when I mentioned supply chain, that means I'm heartless. I mean, I care more about cost than about the lives of children in Gaza. And that's simply not true. I'm just saying that there are a lot of implications out there. And foreign policy and economics and foreign trade and finances and so many different things. And so there are a lot of people out there who'd rather attack my character, who'd rather attack who I am, and attack my sense of morality than to actually tackle the issue. So I think that's been adopted by many on the left. When it comes to the topic, the sex debate that I mentioned, it is really hateful, it's really harmful. It really diminishes the dignity of trans, of people, of the intersex people. And that's simply not true. It's really their tactic. I think we've got to find a way to counter that.
So are you getting support from the administration? I mean, we asked this last time, but how are they interacting with you when you're being attacked?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think the administration has been, in neutral stance on this topic. They haven't acted against me or against the attackers. So I think status quo is going on. Faculty that I talked to, they actually expressed support for me, but in terms of punishment or consequences for people who attack me, that remains to be seen. I think nothing is going to happen, but because apparently you need more than one instance to consider things harassment, consider some of those mean-spirited messages harassment. But also, if you look at messages, for example, they come out and say things that are unpopular, but deserve discussion, and I get attacked, what message is that going to say? Is that going to send to other people? It really suppresses the spirit of debate and free speech on campus. Nobody's going to want it to come out and say things that might not agree with the majority of the people.
Narrative. Yeah, well, that's the whole point, I think. So you should keep records of those ugly messages, because the next time you can force some kind of response from the administration. But what else is happening on campus? Anything else you want to tell us about?
Absolutely. So, with regard to the Israel and Palestine situation, I think we've seen the encampment on Columbia's campus, and that's also happening now on MIT's campus. And just yesterday, this whole situation of people who are protesting the war in the Middle East, and they came out and they are camping the quad. And I think that's a really interesting, I don't think nothing disruptive is being done yet, but that's really, it's a developing situation. So I think that's really interesting to take note of. And I think compared to what's going on and on Columbia's campus, and I think,
well, it's obviously coordinated, right? I mean, it's
absolutely. And it's actually interesting that some of these organizations were also in sync with, last year, they sent out a message supporting a known terror organization, Hamas also, but also some smaller terrorist organizations that, they're being coordinated. And even though they've been suspended, I think they are, the forces are still going on. And
I'm going to end that there just because we need a little time to talk. But anyway, I just wanted to get people out there and to listen to Spencer and try to get some motivation at Emory, because there's a lot of similar crap going on there. And
Georgia. Smart young man.
Yeah, definitely. All right, Bill, let's move on to our discussion part.
Okay. So a couple things to talk about. One is within about 48 hours from now, just over 48 hours, the GOP has called a meeting of the statewide committee, and a number of the elites will attempt to remove Brian K. Pritchard from his position as first vice chair. We'll be watching this closely. We are watching it closely and have been. And we are seeing a number of people, a vast number all over the state, some beyond the state, that are saying this shouldn't happen. What in the heck is going on? this guy is working every day for election integrity, and yet these people are trying to use, you know, an excuse to remove him, and have been apparently for over a year. So we will be reporting on that carefully over the next 48 hours as things progress, and we expect that more people than maybe expected will be weighing into the situation. The other thing that hit my radar just in the last 12, 15 hours is that Katherine Engelbrecht did a piece with Tucker Carlson. And she, in the past, Katherine and Greg have both raised the concern regarding whether illegal aliens might find a way to vote. And in fact, most states, including Georgia, really don't have a citizenship check prior to casting a vote. As long as you have as long as you're registered and have a driver's license or another form of ID, ostensibly you'll be allowed to vote. Now, how do you stop that? Well, in addition to those concerns, just the operational, how would you prevent it? Katherine has also raised the knowledge regarding some federal laws which seem to open a potential loophole for folks who are not citizens to be immune in some ways, I think is the term that might be used, from prosecution should they attempt to vote or actually vote. And so I would recommend that video done between Katherine and Tucker should be required viewing for everybody that's interested and concerned about election integrity. I don't know that they've voiced a solution yet, but what I'll be watching is if this becomes known and if this is a loophole in federal law, you would expect the Congress to stand up instantly and do things to close such a loophole. I would expect them to close the loophole and then celebrate, just as we saw the House do week and a half ago when they voted $61 billion to go to Ukraine. And so that's what we expect. If that's not what happens, then we need to sit back and ask ourselves, what in the heck is going on if this is known and Congress seems to be ignoring it? And I hope that that is not what happens. But we need to be watching.
We'll post that article tonight or that video out on CDM.press and get it out all over our socials and try to get maximum viewership for Tucker. You know, not that we'll add millions to his millions, but we'll get him some more. Anything else, Bill?
Those are the two biggies for me for right now. We've got, you know, we have plenty of movement. Again, I want to thank the folks from around Georgia. I got, 15, 18 calls today with new information, new issues, some quite urgent. And I give credit to the folks. We got a thank you in chat just a few minutes ago, but I will tell you that the work that's going on here is a combination of what we're fortunate enough to do, but the engine behind that is the people of Georgia that are bringing things forward. Thank you for that, and we will not ignore that.
I agree. I'm going to run a quick 1 minute clip here.
If you haven't noticed, gold has reached a new high, all-time highs actually, and keeps going up every day. Why is that? It's because precious metals are a long-time historical store of value. And if you own a portfolio and you have assets in the fiat currencies, i.e. stocks, bonds, cash, or whatever, you're vulnerable to hyperinflation, which is coming as our debt explodes another trillion every 90 days. It's really scary. So how do you protect yourself? Go to Advisor Metals. If you look on any of our CDM.press sites, about halfway down, there's an ad for Advisor Metals. Click on it, fill out the form for your contact info, and Ira Bashatsky will contact you and talk to you. It's an easy conversation. There's no sales pitch. He's completely verified by us. He has a regulatory background we've checked into. We've checked with his bankers. We've checked with his IRA custodians for metals. And we can highly recommend Advisor Metals and ERA. So go to Advisor Metals. If you call them directly, tell them we sent you at CDM, and he'll definitely take care of you. But protect your portfolio, because you really need to. It's coming. Thank you.
Well, with that, Bill, if you don't have anything else, take us out. Thank you.
All right. I think that will do it for now. Stay tuned and watch Georgia Record for what's coming soon.